Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode, post RMPA retrospective episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I almost forgot the name of our podcast for a second. It's been a day.
Who are we?
I don't know. We've been ranting about capitalism, and so we're going to do it some more probably. But we're going to talk. So, like with all of these episodes, I'm going to have kind of a supercut of the interviews that we did based on this episode. I'll have the individual episode links in the description so that if you're interested in listening to them on their own or listening to them all at once, I definitely recommend these interviews. And over these next last episode and the next couple after were amazing, and everyone should listen to them multiple times to build their numbers up so that we get to do this again next year. So we're gonna talk this episode about today, whatever, about some research that was done kind of on the barest of budgets. There seems to be, you know, the barest of budgets being zero. That these are two research students of yours, Thomas. Amazing research students who did some really cool research on the shoest of, you know, shoestringiest, I don't know how to word that, of budgets. And really on, you know, with kind of a severe lack of the normal materials that we would expect. And that's kind of something that I don't know if anyone's gotten really good at it over the last decade. I think I've gotten really good at working with nothing or very little. I'm always surprised when I get funding. I don't know what to do with myself right now. I've got a faculty research grant and it'll cover some stuff, but not the basic infrastructure. And that's kind of what I think we're kind of theming these two studies on. And maybe to talk a little bit more about like what we learned as the methodology on the process from these, as opposed to like maybe what we found, because we learned a little bit. We probably needed to collect some more participants. We need a little more research into some of the you know, we definitely want to move forward with some of these studies, but but there's definitely a lot learned in the process.
Yeah, so these two studies with Andromeda Day and Maggie Crow, well, I should say, first of all, these are the only two students of ours who were like comfortable podcasting at RMPA. But we had so many. Like 12 of them. So many. Like, I learned a lot about lab building this last year. But I will say, kind of like, you know, reversing, like going back into time and like thinking about like doctoral training and how to be a researcher and stuff like that. Our advisor is very, 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 very thrifty dude when it comes to research. And I thought I was prepared for receiving the bare minimum. And it turns out
there's something below the bare minimum.
Yeah, no, you can be thriftier than Dr. Steven Risen. So no, his research and kind of the way that we were both trained has been predicated on a certain degree of institutional support, right? And so there is some stuff that is a given when you go to a university. Like, it may not be like seed money for your research lab, but it probably will involve like having access to updated survey design and collection software, such as like Qualtrics, or there might be a pool of participants ready to take surveys and do studies every semester in the form of like a Sona research pool. Or what else have we lost? Those are the two primary ones.
And that was the bare minimum. I think the department used SurveyMonkey when I was collecting research at Southeastern. But at that point, I had made it into a PhD program. So like while I was teaching there, and so I had access to Qualtrics through the institution. So
like, and these things costs money, and they're, you know, I would say the obligation of the university to pay for these things for all faculty, all staff, all students. Like, that is like bare minimum. Like, if you expect any sort of research to happen at your university, like, if you don't have a survey subscription, like, game over. Like, you're dead in the water.
Yeah, and you don't have to buy... So you don't even have to buy one copy for every student, because not every student's going to need to do survey research. But, like, a lot of grad students are. Our university is, like, 50% grad students, Tom. Like, we are a grad institute. Like, it's shocking to me that, like, our grad population and our undergrad population are so close in actual size. Because it's usually not the case. It's usually, like, 20-80 or 10-90. But, yeah.
Right. And so, like, that's what we were used to. Like, we obviously, like, our advisor, he's not a fan of grants. He doesn't want to write them. Right. He doesn't want to manage them. He doesn't want to deal with the administrative mess, which is fair.
See why.
So you come up with a thrifty protocol to engage in high quality, high output research on, you know, a shoestring budget. And then I thought I was ready. Was not ready for the hot mess of going to a tiny regional university with no institutional support whatsoever. And so beyond just like thumbs up, good job, we support you, heart. So that's kind of the backdrop. And so, like, this last year has been a huge, like, my first year here was like, oh god, what am I going to do? And then my second year here has been like a massive learning curve of like, how do I do research in a way that, like, doesn't require me to, you know, go out for a big grant? Because, right, to be honest, like, that's what is typically a big headache turns into a migraine in some contexts.
When you don't have the basic infrastructure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so getting the grants is hard when you have to, like, look NSF in the face and go, yeah, I don't have, like, the basic stuff to do this study, which is why it's in the grant. And they're like, yeah, well, we're going to go with this other researcher who has the basic stuff to do the research for this grant. Yeah. So that's, you know, not great. But I think this last year I have, like, opened up a new branch of the skill tree to do research. And so on top of Andromeda and Maggie's research, so, like, both of those were our case studies and different approaches. There's a third that I learned this year with my student Aaron with Reddit data scraping, which is incredibly efficient and brings out a lot of really interesting stuff. I think we're going to have stuff to publish out of this data set. I think we have at least 4 papers out of this one data collection.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, like, that was cool to figure out. So doing data Reddit scrapes is something that is incredibly possible for researchers at either non-institution supporting universities or maybe at, like, strictly teaching universities where, like, research isn't even, like, they don't even have a triad.
Right.
But if you want to, I think learning how to Reddit data scrape is, like, definitely the easiest way to go when it comes to doing social research. We found a lot of stuff that I'm not at liberty to talk about yet because we're currently drafting papers and I don't want to get scooped.
Yeah.
But very, very valuable research that definitely I'll have more to say about later. But with Maggie and Andromeda, these were, like, two completely separate, like, directions on how to approach doing research without any sort of money whatsoever. So with Andromeda's research, we were looking at people's knowledge of Title IX and violence against women and, like, how that applies to, like, the campus and, like, university life as a whole. And so we were like, let's gamify it. So we put together a Jeopardy game with our dear friend Sarah Tracy. And we had a hell of a time getting this study running. It took an entire year to find a place on campus to run this damn thing. Like, we thought that, like, the office that deals with the student mental health would be helpful in helping us put something together to run this.
Yeah.
Was not whatsoever.
Yeah.
Total waste of time. Then we were like, hey, let's contact the Title IX coordinator. I'm sure she does events. Does not.
She resigned.
Did she resign?
No, I'm thinking, no, she didn't.
No, that was the accessibility person.
That was the accessibility coordinator, which would be a whole other issue. No, she's still, but yeah, like, no, they don't do anything like that. Like, she's like there just to make sure the university is following the law. Like, that's her job.
Yep. No, she shows up on faculty like orientation week and does her song and dance in front of her PowerPoint. And then she goes back to her office and deals with complaints.
Yeah.
And protects the university's name.
Yep. Exactly.
But yeah, we were like, I'm sure she does something, but turns out that for undergrad education in Title IX and violence against women, undergrads don't get training in this whatsoever. Nope. And the ones that do get training are typically like employees, like residential assistants in dorms. Yep. And they just get a copy of the PowerPoint and have to take an online quiz.
Yep. It's bad.
And so,
yeah.
So we're like, okay. So finally, we found a home with this research with the undergrad experience office. God bless Nayeli, who helped get us set up at one of their events. Whoa, I'm getting a phone call from a number that's all zeros.
Don't answer it.
Scam likely, I'm sure. So we were able to set up during like what's called the midterm escape. We got access to a room. We got to run the study with students who show up to like get free pizza and play games. And it was fantastic. And everybody on that team was so happy to see that research be closed down and presented and never touched again.
Yeah, I would imagine. Like, it's just like, even just sometimes finding space is such a headache. You go through all these hoops to get and all these like legitimate hoops. So IRB approval, you're making sure everything's on the ethical up and up, like you have this solid study. We had a grad student this semester was just defended his thesis. His N was 6.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, your comments on that thesis were great. It was like, why don't you just like scrap all the quantitative and just post the qualitative because it's more meaningful. And you're absolutely right. And that's kind of like, I think one of the things that I've seen myself doing is like I tried to make it work. I tried to work through like the university globals, and now they're getting a little more like restrictive on what we put on the global. You know, we're not supposed to have access to it. A bunch of weird rules. And I get some of it, but it's just, it's so hard. It's so hard to collect data at a small, well, again, without those basic infrastructure. I'm using my own survey hosting software or survey hosting, you know, background stuff. I'm doing kind of everything on my own to try to kind of maintain this. I am writing some, you know, I wrote a grant to go and collect data at a fan conference. I'm trying to do all the legwork myself because I can't rely on a student because we don't have one. I can't rely on that infrastructure because we don't have it. And I think that's why I'm shifting more and more to these sort of interests in like folk tales and stories within the community, because like I could go talk to 10 people and like that's big data for popular culture journals, and that's big data for communications journals. You know, if I've got 20, 30 interviews, that's good stuff. 10 interviews is like enough to write a paper on, to like kind of like show your point through the stories that people tell. And that is, it's a lot of legwork, but it is much more manageable than like, well, I got to get 400 participants. And as I'm learning with another grad student, MTurk charges you a 20% uptick. So $400 dollar a participant, which is, as this email we got today, abysmal reimbursement for MTurk. It's so 400 participants at a dollar a piece cost you $560.
Right.
And boy, like we were shooting for at least 500, which is still an abysmal number for what the thesis proposal is. So it's going to be like a pilot factor analysis now.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's like we can't get 2,000 participants. How are we going to get, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 participants with nothing?
Right. So. And that's kind of like because there's one avenue you can go with data collection, right? Like you can do the Amazon Turk, which costs money, which unless there's some sort of like basic infrastructure to pay for that, like that's off the table. Then you run to the other issue with like social media recruitment for studies. And so like it is hyper hit or miss with that. Yep. So like some research I've done just in the last year, like one study has like an N of like 1800 after cleaning it.
Nice.
Which is fabulous.
Yeah.
Another study is hanging out at 100. And then the other one plateaued at 200 3 months ago and we can't get it to budge.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, like, and then last year I collected one that was like 600. And I was like, great, this works. So like, it's kind of like, one, it's a hassle because you're going to get cyberbullied hard. So like you have to like weigh the odds if you even have the mental space to do social media data collection. And by social media data collection, I mean specifically like posting an online survey for people on the internet to take. They will tell you horrible things and question whether or not you're a legitimate person and like why did you go into research and you suck and all that fun stuff. See our episode 2 years ago about the inconvenient sample with Adam Ray and Andrew Tag, and here are some horror stories. In fact, that was 2 years ago, almost exactly, I think.
Was it that long ago? I thought it
wasn't
like
last
year. No, God. It was 2 years
ago. Almost 2 years ago.
We're hitting 3 years in a couple of weeks.
We are. So that's like a whole hot mess. And then like we have some really, really wonderful collaborators across the globe who are more than willing to collect data for us. But that is like, one, I don't want to be a hassle.
Right.
And two, that's not as like, it no longer, like the joy of autonomous research is kind of taken away. Like there's the joy of collaborative research, which is wonderful. But then there's also like the, I want to run my study and
then
next thing you know, you're fighting with a Canadian IRB. So like,
like,
okay, whatever. So like doing like in-house research at the university without a pool is difficult in the way that I just described, but also it's a new skill tree is unlocked because now you have to learn marketing. And like advertising and graphic design and like start recruiting people like old school. And so that was like the majority of what happened with Andromeda's project was literally like, please come. We have gift cards. Please come.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough.
No. Yeah, you really have to sell it. And again, it's and like again, it would be easier if there was, but I think like what we talked about last episode, like currently right now it's even tougher because there is this facade of the normal university. It appears from a distance as the normal university, but it's tough to get people into a lab right now. For a number of reasons. It could be that they're still concerned about getting sick. It could be burnout. You know, we have all these potential other variables that may come into play. The campus is still, it's better than it was last year in terms, or, you know, a semester ago, the fall semester. It's a little more lively, but like that doesn't say much. And if those students aren't there,
it's shocking.
Yeah.
No, it's shock. This, like, and I know this isn't like the only campus on in the world that's having this issue, but like, I'll go an entire day without seeing anybody.
Yeah.
And I like work in a building that has a ton of classes happening in it at all times, and I still don't see people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Like there's sometimes I get to chat with, you know, some of the other faculty in the little hallway, because there's one that like works more than we do. And yeah, she might be the only person I see and say hi to, or I'll see the janitor, the custodian, and I'll get to say hi to him. And yeah, it's, and then like, I'll go to another building to like, go talk to another faculty member if I have a question. And it's like, that building's dead too. And it's like 1 or 10 a.m. or it's like, wait a second, what's going on? But yeah, I think it's that it's just, it's all part of kind of the same broader, you know, again, then and I think like what we talked about last week with like, there are these things that the university will put together, but like, it's kind of like a facade, like it's, and I'm, again, I'm sure it's not just us. It's a lot of the issues that I see with us, I saw at the last university I worked at, but I'm also more involved here. So I'm seeing stuff that like, I wouldn't have seen if I was just sort of coasting and doing my own thing. But yeah, there's a lot of that stuff too. Like, you know, I'm learning the hard way. Like, we have to cancel a major potential research project this year because where we want to go collect data literally takes place the day before and the day after the new fiscal year starts. And they're like, well, we can't give you money for this fiscal year. And I'm like, but there's no, like, but this event happens at this time. And I was approved to do research at this event. And they're like, no, you can only do like the last day of the event. I was like, well, I guess I have to cancel everything. I can't even buy equipment because it can't be bought. And you know, I understand like the way that like money to the university goes, but this is like grant money. Like, it's not a grant, but it is a grant, right? And it's kind of that same thing. Like, there's just such, it's so difficult. It's so much more difficult than it needs to be because there's that lack of support from the kind of university system to support the research or to support the teaching. Like, it's so hard to get little things like, you know, and like, some people will say, it's like, I'm all for our ITS crew. Like, I the people I'd have worked with and like gotten help from are usually great. But boy, again, is it difficult to get like something set up in a classroom or to like argue about like just these little things. And like, I know that there are issues everywhere. Like, you know, problems with heating and facilities. Like, some of those rooms are just like, why is the heater on? My projector is overheating. And like, nothing gets done. You know, nothing can be done because there's just so much. And it kind of like boils into like the way we do research. There's just so many little bitty issues that like, again, could be solved. A little infrastructure, a little support, loosening some of those restrictions to make it easier, but there's still that like mentality that like, we can't be trusted with this money. We can't be trusted with this infrastructure. That's why we have to have like one copy of SPSS on a on a remote desktop for everyone to share. And it's like, oh my God, why? And then they look at me like,
no,
I'm the one not doing the right thing, when I'm like, yeah, that's why we don't use SPSS in my stats class anymore. And they're like, well, we should have. I'm like, you guys knew about this 4 years ago.
Right.
Like,
I mean, at this point, like, I'm think, because, you know, I'm a little bit of a troll, and
yeah,
I like making incompetent people have reality checks. I'm just going to submit my, what is it, my halfway point, my 4 year review. It's just going to be teaching and service. I'm not going to include research in it. Be like, you don't get to see this. You didn't support this. It's not your business.
I mean,
you didn't pay me to do it. You don't get to see it.
Yeah, but like, you know, that was part of my interview. It was like, we're predominantly teaching. So like, I was like, there was like a 70% expectation on teaching. And I'm like, great, but you still expect me to do research, right? Right? And so if you expect that, and like, if we expect our students to get into PhD programs, if we expect our students to get, like, I'm not going to let my own undergrad students into our master's program if they don't have the basic stuff. And like, I'm doing my best getting them the basic stuff. And like, we wouldn't accept an outside student who came in and said, I've never written a research proposal. I've never, never done this basic stuff, right? You know, I don't have any experience with this, you know, and they wanted to do research with us. We'd be like, well, maybe I'll take the person who's got that. And it's kind of the same thing with any faculty.
No, and I think that's been the biggest blessing, I think, and the thing that has worked the best has been designing and building the research lab, as if it was at an R1 university. Like, that's been kind of the, like, I feel, never have I felt like imposter syndrome, but I also like, this is a very serious lab for the kind of school that it is. But then I catch myself and go, actually, that is why it needs to be this, because I cannot let the excuse of the kind of school that this is to, like, because that's going to kill everything. And so, like, leading with the expectation of, like, we're doing R1 level work, even if it is on, like, no budget, it still, like, sets that tone to actually, like, follow through and do that kind of work.
And with, I would argue, R1 level students, that by doing that, you're able to kind of capture those undergrad students and those grad students who are really, really worth moving up into any university they apply for. And we are lucky to have students like that who are motivated to do that. I think that I'm happy that we're kind of getting our department built up. We're getting the departmental, the personnel and like infrastructure together, where I feel like, okay, I can maybe take a stab. I can maybe pick up a student or two extra, and I could take a stab at trying to get some of this research that I've been trying to do for the last couple of years off the ground. And even despite that, like, thanks to the fact that we do that collaborative work and that we engage in research and we work well together, that I'm putting together my official portfolio and gonna be like, yep, I am going to bury them in the amount of research that I was able to do on my own without their help. And I will point that out to let everyone know that, like, this is from the support of my peers in the department and no one else at this institution. I will shout out our research committee. I have felt supported by them.
Yes, we do have a very good research
committee. We have a good research committee. There are faculty who are very supportive of other faculty, but like, that is the extent. Without that faculty support, I would have nothing. Without my ability to collaborate and having good collaborators and having colleagues who are very productive, I wouldn't be able to have what I'm about to turn in, you know. a 6-inch binder or 2-3-inch binders
right
of book chapters and articles and all of this stuff, because I work with people who are understanding that. But I got an email back after talking about my own research issues, and that, like, I'm interim department chair, and one of our collaborators was like, ugh, that is way too much service for an assistant professor. And I was like, I absolutely agree. Within a year, I've been, you know, interim chair, faculty senate chair, vice president, you know, vice chair of the Senate. So it is way too much. And I'm like, yeah. In retrospect, I should have just cut it all out and actually, like, done more work on my own. Put that energy into other things, but would have made my life easier. But that, such is the nature of a small comprehensive institution.
Yep.
That we could still be successful, and that we could still show that, like, despite the limitations that we have, we are still, like imagine what we could do with it. Like, that's almost what I hope. Like, I know that's not what they see. I know, like, that's not what the powers that be are, like, looking down at our department and going, like, no, they've got that business mentality where it's like, well, if they could do it on nothing, then we'll just keep giving nothing.
Which is why they will not get a research section in my tenure paperwork.
Yeah.
Puff. So.
For this one, I would advise you to submit it with your final. Unless you're looking for other employment.
What are you talking about? We're going to monetize the podcast and become millionaires.
Oh, God, if only, right? It's a lot of griping, but, like, I think I would say, like, the bright side, and maybe, like, well, what do we expect to see in 2024? I'm expecting to show up with twice as much work at RMPA in 2024.
Correction. Twice as much work because we have twice the number of students, not yes. because this fool, I'm pointing at myself, yep. submits 12 things instead of 6.
Yes. Yes. No, I will submit a couple of things, but no, because we will have that many students who are gung-ho about doing good research and are able to pull it off because they have great support from our faculty. And to show what we can do. Because again, like, I could just imagine, like, I'm just, you know, thinking about, like, how productive we have been. How much more productive could we be with Qualtrics and Sona and like a small research budget? It'd be huge. Like, massive, like, I mean, I think just with what I'm getting from this grant, we're going to be able to, like, do a lot more. This faculty grant, we're going to be able to do so much work in the future, because we were lucky enough to have supportive faculty.
Absolutely supportive faculty and some kick-ass students.
Yeah So that's our
the
positive out of all of it.
So I'm not misconstrued. I will also share that the research that the students in this lab are doing are their research. Mm-hmm. They're not getting delegated my research.
Yeah.
So your boy is in a million places at one time, at all times.
Yeah. Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, like, I'm just juggling thesis students right now. Like, I've put some of my stuff on the back burner to help them. It's a lot.
It's insane because even my thesis students have, like, one or two projects on the side that they're doing that are not related to their thesis whatsoever. And then there's the thesis.
Yeah.
Not. Man, you give me just a little bit of money, watch how far I'd run.
Yeah. Right? So, let's see. Like, you know, our prediction, double.
Double
at RMPA 2024. And maybe Southwest Psych and wherever else we can go, plus interviews, plus whatever else they'll let us do. No, I think we'll, because again, we've got those students. We've got this motivated group of students in our department who want that kind of applicable research, kind of get it. As our advisor would say, like, they get it. They get the process. They know what needs to be done, or they're able to pick that up really quickly. And hopefully, maybe by next year, we're not just talking about RMP, we're talking about the publications that they're getting.
Yeah.
That's coming.
I mean, they've got, we're doing this summer, we're doing writing hour every week. They nice. All have one or two publications lined up that they need to be working on. I start one-on-ones again next week. Like, we're about to kick it into gear in the writing department.
Hell yeah.
So, huzzah, onward and upward.
Yeah, and on that positive note, this is probably where we should end this. On that positive note, we'll say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye!